Hello everyone, and welcome again to the Associate Affiliate Cricket Podcast. I'm joined, as usual, by my co-host, Andrew Nixon. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Russ. Hi, everybody.
Andrew, we have a pretty big show today. There's quite a lot of cricket going on, and almost all of it's in Dubai.
Yeah, sort of out of the blue, they announced all these matches taking place in the UAE, which was which caught us surprised, but yeah, very, very welcome to see all these matches.
We're going to go through a few of them, I guess, or all of them, but I guess the important ones to start with are the iCup and the WCL games, which we'll start with. The Namibia played Kenya, and I think we thought that Namibia would be stronger here, but Kenya came through with wins in both games, the first by 11 runs and the second by 92.
Yeah, this was a big surprise. The first game Kenya scored 287, and then Namibia got close. Stephen Bard scored 132 from 106 balls, but nobody else really did anything with the bat, and they were bowled out just one over short of the full 50. Then the second game, Kenya were bowled out for 215, but then Namibia just were collapsed. It wasn't until the final wicket that they put any sort of runs on the board. They were 67 for 9 and then bowled out for 123, so a good last wicket partnership, but I think pretty terrible by Namibia all round in those two matches.
It's surprising too, because they had their pretty much all their good players, so you expect sometimes they're a bit short, but Venshaw, Williams, Snyman, Baird, they're all there, and basically the top order didn't do anything.
Yeah, you look at your Bard after scoring 130-odd in the first match. He gets out for 14, Williams 18, Snyman 7. It's a pretty poor batting performance and not really what we expect from Namibia, especially playing on home territory.
At least Namibia with one win and Kenya with three and actually on top of the table. But it's not disastrous for Namibia, but these are the games they would have expected to win.
Yeah, certainly, and in contrast to Namibia, Kenya find themselves on top of the table at the moment, which is, I think, will come as a surprise. Kenya weren't originally even going to be in this tournament, and now they find themselves on top of the table and could remain there, depending on what happens in the upcoming Hong Kong UAE series.
Speaking of Hong Kong and UAE, they played the iCup match, and both teams had a two-day warm-up beforehand, which was good to see. UAE played Oman and Hong Kong played Nepal. Two-day matches, though, it's very hard to get any sort of result.
I think the first two-day game between Hong Kong and Nepal, they tried their best to get a result with mandatory declarations, but to be fair, they very nearly did get a result, and the very nearly had quite an exciting finish on the final day with Nepal needing to bat out some overs and avoid losing wickets. But the UAE and Oman didn't do that. But even then, there was a bit of a batting collapse from the UAE in their second innings, which was, I think, a sign of things to come. And Oman very nearly had a chance to chase down a target, but obviously, and it was Oman's first multi-day game they've ever played, so good to see Oman playing a multi-day game. Then onto the Intercontinental Cup. This was, a strange match, I think it's safe to say.
Yeah, you'd expect the UAE. I mean, they've got a pretty good record at home, and Hong Kong are still coming to terms with four-day cricket. They batted really well in the first innings. They had two centuries, which anchored the whole thing from Tamer Afzal and Baba Hyatt. And then the UAE, their batting just isn't performing for them right now. They bowled out for 181 in the first innings and collapsed. They lost 5-1 in the first three overs of the final day, and it was only an innings from Sri Kumar that got them to 105 of 61, because everyone else made less than double figures except for Qais Farooq.
I said at the end of the final day, I was surprised that Hong Kong didn't declare earlier to maybe set the UAE a target of around 250, and instead they had UAE chasing about 380. I thought, well, UAE can just bat out the last day for the draw, but they came back on that first morning, and as you say, just it was almost comical the way they collapsed. And I think we're seeing now just what Karim Khan brought to the UAE team. He brought that sort of backbone, that stability that you perhaps need in the longer form of the game. And the post-Karim Khan era is looking a pretty poor one for the UAE, especially in the longer form.
We touched on Oman being over there, and they've also had a couple of games, one-day matches against PNG and Nepal, and they've done very well because, obviously, Oman were the surprise pack of the World 2020, but they've carried that form through into these matches with a victory over Nepal and a fairly close loss to Papua New Guinea.
This is very good to see for Oman. It's showing that the World 2020 wasn't perhaps as fluky as people might have thought it was. Let's not forget, Oman are in World Cricket League Division 5, whereas obviously Papua New Guinea and Nepal are playing in the World Cricket League Championship, and Oman are competing with them. So it shows that that gap there isn't as far apart as people might think. The game is Papua New Guinea. They scored 244 in 36 overs, and very nearly bowled Papua New Guinea out. It was quite a close match, and then obviously beating Nepal. Nepal, I think, some of the old frailties in their batting coming back to haunt them. It was just Paris Kadka and Gyanendra Mala who did anything in that game for Nepal, and Nepal bowled out pretty cheaply, 184. Very, very welcome news for Oman, I think.
There are also a few matches against full members. I guess we'll start with Hong Kong versus England. This was a little controversial. We touched on it last time, but England were criticised, probably rightly, for not playing a full one international.
Yeah, the story behind this is a little odd. It was originally reported as being an ODI, and then that sort of changed. And I was told England were balking over a fee. Later transpired that was actually the match fees for the players. They said they didn't really have the money to play them, which is, bullshit, let's face it. England have a lot, the ECB have a lot of money, as we know from the Big Three governance reforms. And, just everything about it didn't quite add up. They were saying, we only arranged this a month beforehand, so it wasn't time to get the memorandum of understanding that you need for it to be an official ODI or move the great game. But we saw, I think around this time last year, when the West Indies pulled out of their November tour, India were able to arrange a whole series against Sri Lanka within about a week's notice. So to say that you couldn't arrange a one-off ODI with a month's notice, that just doesn't add up.
This is a strangely common complaint amongst cricket that you can't organise stuff. If you hark back to the 1992 World Cup, South Africa was dragged into it with about 2 months' notice, and that was an entire World Cup. So it can't be that hard to organise a match on the fly. And even football, if you look at those, or rugby, those things where they have to organise fixtures, yes, there's a date set aside for it, but they organise friendlies or playoffs on pretty short notice.
Yeah, and the not enough notice thing, or not enough time, these excuses only seem to crop up when it's an associate involved playing a full member. It's noticeable that the biennial ODI against Scotland isn't on the fixture list for England for 2016. Perhaps this trying to say that there's no time, which is nonsense. Ireland always get a rubbish date for their ODI against England because there's not enough time in the schedule. Next year, in 2017, it's planned to be in April, which is a ridiculous date. And it's always, when there's an associate, there's always not enough time, not enough notice, not enough something else, not enough money. But when they're playing a full member, they seem to be able to arrange these things at relatively short notice, and it's perhaps another sign of how badly associates are being treated.
It's also noticeable that England's playing, I think, a 5 one-day series against Pakistan, and although these things are organised within the context of a tour, there's so many associates there. Surely it would have been possible to have some sort of tournament or something rather than just another bilateral series between four members.
Yeah, but obviously, you know, I think the TV broadcasters have their say here. They've played for, they've paid for their England v Pakistan ODIs. They don't want that changing. But you know, that's no reason for not having some extra ODIs. You don't, you know, you, when it's an associate, you don't have to broadcast an ODI. There's no requirement to have a TV umpire and whatnot when it's an associate. When there's an associate involved in a one-day international, so you know the lack of TV broadcasting is no reason for not doing it either.
To the matches themselves, again, England and Hong Kong was played with 13 aside, but England won by 169 runs. It wasn't terribly close, and Pakistan beat Nepal in their match by 121. So, again, not a great result for the associate teams.
No, but I suppose there's the experience factor there. But again, there's some decent performances, especially from Hong Kong. Baba Hayat scored 78 from 81 balls, and we should probably mention he was one of the centurions for Hong Kong in their game against the UAE, and he's been playing very well on the entire tour. I think across all formats on the tour at the moment, he averages something like 120, so he's in some form at the moment.
While we're on four members playing against associates, there was also matches between the USA and Pakistan, which Pakistan, not surprisingly, won fairly comprehensively.
Yeah, just a bit. This was a pretty thumping win for Pakistan. First game, this was a 20-over game, remember, they scored 233. Alia Riaz scored 106 from 39 balls, and then US scored, according to the scorecard, 49 for 5 from 17 overs. I don't know whether it was a Duckworth Lewis method involved here, or whether USA just thought, oh, sod it, we're not going to score it, we'll give up. A pretty thumping win in that first game. And then the second game, USA, for some reason, decided to bat first. Maybe they wanted to, you know, get things over with quickly, and we were bowled out for 56, and then Pakistan knocked off the runs in five overs to win by 10 wickets. So good to see the USA women get a game, but perhaps it would have been perhaps a little unfortunate for the result there.
The other four member that was involved with an associate was Zimbabwe and Afghanistan, and Afghanistan followed up their one-day series victory with a two victories in the T20 internationals.
Yeah, very successful tour for Afghanistan in the end, and let's hope to see more of these matches. I would genuinely like to see more games involving Zimbabwe, Afghanistan, and Ireland. I think there's the potential for creating a decent little three-way rivalry there. As we say, good results for Afghanistan on that tour, and let's hope for more of them. And Afghanistan, obviously, they're now playing in the UAE as well. They've got some T20s against Oman and Hong Kong, and then Intercontinental Cup game against Papua New Guinea.
There was a couple of tournaments played as well, mostly at development level, but both were good to see. There was an East Asian series that included Hong Kong side made up of players of Chinese descent, and they were playing against Japan, China, and a Hong Kong B side.
This was one of those tournaments that I think we all like to see. Organised outside of the purview of the ITC, but bringing together your local rivalries and trying to stoke them. I think I'd like to see more of these tournaments. So I think we've said that before on the podcast. Obviously, good to see China getting the chance to play some stronger teams than they sometimes do. They weren't that successful in the games, but obviously good to see them getting a chance to play. And you know, the Hong Kong Dragons, I think, are an important part of development in Hong Kong, bringing on your Chinese players of Chinese heritage into a higher profile form of cricket. And you know, I think the hope is that eventually a lot of these players will graduate to the main Hong Kong team. And yeah, in general, I think a successful tournament. I should probably just say Hong Kong A were the champions by some distance.
Yeah, Ming Lee played for Hong Kong Dreams as well, and interesting news that he'll be playing as a development player for the Sydney Sixers in the BBL, so similar to what Legacy Arca was playing for the Renegades last year.
Yeah, this is, I think, surprising news. It's been a while since he's played at senior level for Hong Kong. Yeah, very, very good news. It's unlikely that he'll get a game for Sixers. Obviously, Legacy Acker didn't get a game when he had a similar deal, but very welcome news. He'll get to train and get experience from some very talented players.
The other tournament that was interesting, there was a women's tournament in Africa, but it was, I guess, most interesting because it's in Northwest Africa, and that's an area that hasn't necessarily had a lot of development in cricket generally, but particularly in women's cricket. There's a number of teams playing their first women's tournaments in this, involve Gambia, Sierra Leone, Mali, Ghana.
Yeah, obviously, you know, as good as it is to see the men's tournaments, it's even better to see the women's tournaments as well. Women's associate cricket, officially organised by the ICC, has seemed to have gone backwards a little bit in recent years, and you know, any tournament that fills that gap caused by the ICC losing interest to some extent is always welcome.
It's worth noting here that Sierra Leone dominated the tournament. Actually, they won a number of matches without losing a wicket. They were very low scoring. The final game of the tournament was 36-34 for Gambia over Ghana. So it was interesting, but as you say, a tournament like this, it's mostly about development. It's just great to get them out there. Feel.
Yeah, and you'll get them representing the country, and hopefully it'll inspire the players to want to do that again, and perhaps inspire others to try and follow in their footsteps. So yeah, more about development rather than necessarily the quality of the cricket there.
Moving on to news, Andrew, there's a few bits and pieces that have come up. One, perhaps one of the more interesting ones, is that now that Srinivasan has moved on from the ICC, there's and the BCCI, it seems like the Asian Cricket Council might get some sort of rebirth, not sure what form.
Yeah, this was another sort of surprising bit of news. Obviously, the ACC had been shut down about 6 months ago now, and all of a sudden, it's sort of coming back. The proposal from the new guy in India, Anurag Thakur, is that 2% of the four full members in Asia's income will go to the Asian Cricket Council, and there's a one-day tournament being proposed involving A teams from the full members and senior teams of the top associates, which I think has happened before, but hasn't happened for a while. So, yeah, very, even this a cautious welcome, whether it will come back in exactly the same form as it used to be, you know, whether we'll see all those, you know, great number of tournaments the ACC used to organise remains to be seen. But so far, this is looking like very good news.
Other ICC news, the jersey had been chosen to host World Cricket League 5 in May. Probably not a surprise, though.
No, when you sort of look at the team taking part, only Tanzania, Guernsey and Jersey would have enough turf wickets, and obviously they decided that, you know, Jersey hasn't hosted a World Cricket League tournament for a while, and Guernsey has hosted one most recently, and it wasn't really being played at a time of year suitable for Tanzania. Obviously, with Oman involved in the World 2020, that meant it couldn't be played in Tanzania in sort of March time. So yeah, Jersey was, I think, the obvious choice, and it's got some of the best facilities of the participating teams, so you know, why not in Jersey? And yeah, so it'll be 21st to the 28th of May, and hopefully another good World Cricket League tournament.
And the other interesting news, and probably very important for Ireland, is that it looks like Boyd Rankin will be making a return.
Yeah, he becomes eligible again in January, 2 years after his rather brief and unsuccessful England career came to an end. I think Rankin saw the writing was on the wall when he wasn't picked in any of the England touring squads this winter, not the you know, the full squad, the A team or the performance squad. So he's obviously decided to throw his lot back in for Ireland, and I think it's very, very welcome. I think we've seen in the last year, especially since Trent Johnson stopped playing as well, that Ireland's bowling has lacked something. And you know, Boyd Rankin obviously is you know, he's not as young as he was when he last played for Ireland, but you know, he's still a very, very talented bowler in county cricket, and I think he'll be a very welcome addition to the Ireland squad, especially for the World 2020.
Speaking of the World 2020, the Women's World 2020 qualifier will be played at the end of the month in Thailand. This is obviously probably the most important associate tournament for women, and there are 8 teams involved. One of them is Bangladesh, another Zimbabwe, so 6 associate teams. It'll be very interesting. There's not a lot of form, obviously, to go in, but 2 groups. We'll start with Group A, Andrew. Bangladesh, Papua New Guinea, Scotland and Thailand. Obviously, Bangladesh will be the favourite to go through, but they've been challenged by associates in the past, and possibly Thailand is maybe the most likely challenger to Bangladesh in this.
Yeah, they've had some success in women's cricket before. I think the first Asian Games cricket tournament they did very well back in 2010. Papua New Guinea and Scotland. Papua New Guinea, you know, obviously they beat Japan to get into this tournament. And obviously they previously lost a lot to Japan, so they've been improving. Whether they've improved enough to be able to challenge Thailand and Bangladesh, I don't know. Scotland as well have been preparing relatively well. They've, you know, played a lot of county cricket in England, so you know they've got some form coming into it. But I think of all the teams most likely to get to the semi-finals along with Bangladesh, I think Thailand are probably the favourites there.
In Group B, this is, to me, it looks a slightly stronger group. China, Ireland, the Netherlands and Zimbabwe. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if at least 2 of the associates came ahead of Zimbabwe.
No, that wouldn't surprise me either. Zimbabwe's women's team isn't anywhere near as strong as the men's team. And, yeah, Ireland and the Netherlands, you could well see top of the group. And China is what you can't rule out. China, you know, China have a very talented women's side. You know, the women in China have come on a lot stronger than the men have in the last few years. And you could well see Zimbabwe even finish last in the group in this group.
Can I get a prediction out of you, Andrew?
Oh, we always hate giving predictions on this podcast. I think, obviously, we can both say that Bangladesh are going to qualify. I'm gonna put my money down on, I think, Ireland with China to push the Netherlands close for third place.
I think you're right on Bangladesh and Ireland. I think it's most likely going to be Thailand who comes second in that group, and therefore the third place. They've beaten China a couple of times when they play them, and I think China and the Netherlands will be maybe the team that will decide who goes up against that, and that'll be a real lottery. It could be any of those 3. I might just say the home side, which would be fantastic. It would be really awesome to see China get in, just for the publicity that would potentially bring in China, of course.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Looking to other previews, there's a World Cricket League matches being played. Hong Kong will play the United Arab Emirates in their matches. Based on what's happened so far in the UAE's recent form, Hong Kong would probably be going to those as favourites now.
The way the UAE have been playing as well, I don't back them at all to do well in those matches. You know, even in home conditions, you've been playing pretty poorly all year, I think, since the World Cup, and Hong Kong are on a good run of form at the moment. Two or three of their players are probably in the form of their lives, especially Baba Hayat, as we mentioned earlier. And I think Hong Kong, you know, odds-on favourites for those 2 games.
And in the other World Cricket League matches that we played, Nepal will be playing PNG to finish round 2. Neither of them won any matches yet, but again, you probably think PNG ought to be favourites, and Nepal's batting still seems to just be struggling.
Obviously Nepal playing in conditions that they're reasonably familiar with. They do tend to do better in Asia than elsewhere, but they've not done too well on this tour. Papua New Guinea have played a little better, I think. They had a strong, or they beat Oman in their warm-up, as Nepal lost. So I think I'd back Papua New Guinea just in these matches, but Nepal can sometimes surprise us. But I think, Papua New Guinea just about the favourites of this.
And in the Intercontinental Cup, Afghanistan will be playing Papua New Guinea, and this is much less likely to go well for Papua New Guinea. You'd think Afghanistan actually do seem to be playing pretty well right now, and again, they'll be playing in Sharjah, which they're very familiar with.
Although we did say that ahead of the Netherlands, the Papua New Guinea Intercontinental Cup game, and then Papua New Guinea surprised us in that, so you never know, but Afghanistan... one of the strongest multi-day sides in associate cricket, and I think they're definitely favourites of this, but I'm not going to completely rule out Papua New Guinea surprising us.
And in what looks like on the fixture list a qualifier for the Asian Cup is not in fact the qualifier for the Asian Cup, but all four nations that will be involved in that are playing a 2020 tournament in UAE at the end of the month.
It's not even actually a tournament. It's just various one-off matches randomly organised. I get the feeling that this was originally going to be the qualifier, but they've decided that it's now not the qualifier. Obviously, each team isn't playing each other the same amount of times. Quite why they've done that, I don't know. They've got all the teams in the same country at the same time, why not just play the qualifier? But I think they wanted to have the qualifier in similar conditions to what are going to be experienced in the actual Asia Cup 2020 itself. So obviously that's why that's being done. But very very odd that you've got all these teams in the country at the same time. They need to have a qualifier, and they're not playing a qualifier, but they are playing each other in lots of 2020 matches. It'd be a good experience for Oman as well. Obviously they've not played any sort of 2020 international since getting 2020 international status, other than the fifth place playoff at the World 2020 qualifier against Afghanistan. But this will take them up to, I think, enough games to get onto the 2020 rankings, which would be good for them. But very, very odd that it's not the qualifier. But it's very difficult to predict what the ICC will do at any time. And their decisions rarely involve common sense.
Also on these list of matches being played in the UAE, the Afghanistan will be playing Oman in a 3D match, and Hong Kong will be playing Pakistan at T20 International. So both of those will be interesting to see how particularly Oman and Hong Kong go.
Very much. I think England are playing the UAE as well in a 2020 match, which had already been on the fixture list for a while. And as you can see, Oman playing a 3-day match as well. Sort of being thrown right in at the deep end with the multi-day cricket, obviously coming up against the UAE and now Afghanistan. You think you'd back Afghanistan to win that 3-day game, but we always like seeing some multi-day cricket for associates outside of the Intercontinental Cup. So we can't begrudge Oman getting the chance to play that game, and especially a team that isn't involved in the Intercontinental Cup and is as ranked as low as Oman are in one-day cricket, to be playing a 3-day match against a team like Afghanistan. That's always welcome.
And I think it's particularly good that Oman, despite their ranking, are finding opportunities to play, having proved that they are a competitive side right now.
You almost wish that these sort of opportunities had been given to Nepal, and the Netherlands did get some opportunities after their 2020 national status, but Nepal never really got them, and obviously... Nepal fans will be particularly pleased. They'll be very upset. This could have been Nepal getting all these great matches, great high-profile matches, but obviously it's Oman instead. Good for Oman to be getting all these matches. Long may it continue.
And with that, unless I've forgotten something, which we'll record post me saying this, that's it. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Russ, as always.